Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of What the Health. I'm one of your hosts, Rami.
And I'm Andrea.
And today we're joined by three different youth delegates who were featured on our first dialogue. So without further ado, they're going to introduce themselves.
So my name is Fatima. I'm currently doing my master's in clinical mental health. And I did my undergrad in psychology and pre-med.
Amazing. Nice to have you on the show. What about you, Elise?
Hi, everyone. My name is Elise Nassif, and I'm a project officer at an NGO in Lebanon that works with incarcerated youth. And I'm also a Rotaractor.
Wonderful.
Asra.
Hello, everyone. My name is Asra, and I'm currently doing my PhD in cancer biology. It's good to be with you guys.
Yes. Wow. So we're so excited to have these three lovely ladies join us on the show today. We get to know a little bit more about them. And they actually had this wonderful opportunity to participate in our first generation dialogue. Ladies, can you tell us how that was? Maybe we can go ahead and start with Asra. Tell us, how was your experience on our first generation's dialogue?
To be honest, it has been a great experience. It was my first time like being with a dialogue with people from different parts of the world. So it was great, especially it happened at the beginning of the COVID outbreak. So it was a great opportunity to learn all about the COVID, whatever is happening, whatever we are currently lacking. And yeah, I'm like, until now, I'm really grateful to have been part of the dialogue.
And we were grateful to have you on that dialogue. It was so great getting to meet you and just hearing your opinions on access to healthcare, which is obviously a super important topic. What about you, Elise? Tell us, how was it for you?
It was a surreal experience. I mean, we were all on lockdown and COVID was hectic. And the people you guys brought, the experienced and successful people that we were able to talk to them, it was super friendly and fruitful. I was really, really excited for this whole venture with you guys.
Yes, super grateful to have someone like you with your experience and your just all of your journey with working with youth. That was something really special that we can count on as well. And Miss Fatima, how was it for you? Tell us about it.
Like both Elise and Asra said, it was really interesting, especially because during lockdown, we hadn't interacted with people in such a long time.
So oh my
it was
gosh, so yeah.
For people from different backgrounds. And to learn from very different perspectives as well. So it was a very nice experience.
I actually have a question. So, I mean, a lot of the times these dialogues bring up conversations that, you know, sometimes are kind of outside the public eye, but at the same time, you know, it needs to be coupled with actions. And so a lot of the times I think we need to talk also about what we are doing or what we aspire to do. So why, you know, were you even interested in joining this form of discussion? Like, what did you find value in, you know, talking about these things or in youth advocacy in general?
I mean, for me, for instance, we also like a huge vacuum with regards to healthcare all over the world, even in countries who are very well off, financially stable, there was a vacuum. In a country like mine, like Lebanon, a huge vacuum in terms of healthcare. So it was very interesting to see youth sitting, talking, discussing such important factors that before we may not have had the chance to. And that's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite similar for me with Nigeria and Egypt as well. And also just because in school there, I was always fascinated by Model UN. But then like it wasn't ever really focused on health, which is what I'm interested in. So I thought it would be really nice to kind of have something that was my center of interest. So yeah, that was pretty much it.
And finally, as for me, it was like the global experience. I mean, I wanted to know like, how did other peoples from different countries cope with the COVID? Like what was happening? Because like at that point, we were all in a lockdown in our own countries and it's like, different countries had different struggles. So it was very interesting. Like I wanted to know, what about other countries? How did they cope with the situation? What did they think like were lacking in their countries? So, and at the end, I really learned a lot from it. So yeah, that's about it for me.
So I think one of the things that, you know, come up from this conversation is like different countries were facing the same struggle. And honestly, we're still kind of in this, you know, wishy-washy stage where some countries have, you know, like quick vaccine rollouts and others are just still waiting for the COVAX, you know, to really donate basically vaccines to them. But amidst all of this, I think one common thread that, you know, continuously comes up is the idea of, oh, youth, you know, stand to really face the greatest challenge in the coming times. And, you know, Andrea and I were talking before, like about WHO, like setting up this youth council, trying to incorporate youth ideas, but it's kind of just, you know, a press release. So yeah, just could you tell us about that gap like that you see and how, you know, your proposals that you came up with in really trying to address, these are some of the things that we can change. Just how did that gap really affect you and why did you come up with these form of proposals?
I mean, I think the biggest thing for us was that was how little youth involvement there is in the WHO in general. I think there's supposed to be a youth council, but I don't think it does anything. And I don't think the youth are involved in any way possible. So for our proposal, I know that was a very big part of it, where it was like, we need to kind of target that aspect where youth are more involved, just because the voice of the youth does matter and their ideas are also will probably make a change. So I think that was really important. And I know we also really did care about how the limitations of that and criticism that the WHO was receiving during the pandemic itself, where, like, if you remember, Trump was like really criticizing the WHO, accusing them of being biased towards China and everything. So it was really, it was very important to kind of just try and focus on those issues and see ways of improving that, just because I think we hadn't seen the WHO be at the center of things for so long, but because of the pandemic, it really did need to take like a leading role in terms of just like guiding the countries around the world, and how successful it was at doing that was quite arguable. So yeah, that was the main focus of the proposal.
No, definitely. And I kind of do want to take a step back, because it's true, like right after our first dialogue, you three came together along with other youth delegates to create a proposal that really put a focus on youth participation in the WHO and also some other aspects that you guys thought that could use some improvement. So maybe Elise or Azra can kind of walk us through what that proposal was and how was that experience of actually coming together to create an amazing document like that.
So basically we had several calls with each other where we concluded with a few points that the WHO could work on, because one of the speakers that was at the workshop that we did with the Generations for Health, she works in Gavi, and she said something very important, that the UN as a whole needs a UN 2.0. It's not working. Everything is not working. Everything needs to be redrafted, refocused, and that's what exactly the WHO needs. So we focused on three points. Basically, the first one being giving youth a seat at the table in decision making, and whenever there's an issue or a new project or a statement, to include the youth's voice, maybe as an advisor or as an opinion, as a first step, and then maybe an actual youth delegate that is delegated by the youth all over the world, like sort of an e-election. Mm-hmm. And Asra, if you want to talk about the second point. The second point could be working towards donor equity, because as Fatima said, there were a lot of criticism towards the WHO, towards the UN in general, about which files and which topics are to be discussed on the front line. And it's because there's an unbalanced percentage of donors. We all know, like, the biggest donors are the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation and the US. So certain topics come to the front line and other topics just go unnoticed. This is very unreasonable and quite not transparent.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a third point, right? There was a third proposal.
Yeah, so the third point being creating a recovery committee, because it was seen that the people did not trust the WHO at the end of the day. They trusted the NHS or the CDC. So what if there's a union of all healthcare companies and pharmaceutical companies as a whole? They would come together whenever we're faced, like an ad hoc committee, whenever the world faces a crisis such as COVID, and they would come together and they would advise the people on how to act, and it wouldn't take them such a long time to discover how to act, and they wouldn't have like such conspiracy theorists and anti-vaxxers and all that, maybe even more organized, maybe in a more organized way, they would actually tackle the issue, and we wouldn't have waited so long to wear masks, for example, or for countries to get up and say, oh, we're just going to go with herd immunity, and then millions and millions die for the sake of the economy and for the sake of the financial issue in each country.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's interesting that you bring that point up, because obviously there were a lot of missteps, especially with this whole pandemic. But it's also crazy to me that it took a whole pandemic for us to actually realize what was happening and like the need for these things. So Azra, I do want to kind of focus a little bit more on the first proposal, you know, because Generations for Health, trying to connect young people and public health leaders. But obviously, we like very much agree the fact that youth needs to have a bigger presence, not only in the WHO, but in all international institutions. But since we're focusing on the WHO, I'd love to hear why you think it's more important that youth have a seat at the table.
From how I see it is that, like, as all of us know, like, especially right now, youth were the ones that are most affected with the pandemic, especially because, like, some of them, they lost their education, some of them who work for their families and so on, they had to lose their jobs. Their mental health was also affected. But regardless of that, we still see youth still, like, they're volunteering, they're trying to, like, use the social media to spread awareness about the COVID, about the importance of vaccination and so on. So regardless of all that, still, like, when it comes to government and all the big people, they still look at the youth as, like, you know, like young people with no experience. But I guess this COVID situation, it really, like, shed the light on the importance of having the youth to play a role, like, in, like, not only in the World Health Organizations, but in everything, because the youth that we have now are different from the ones that we have, like, in the earlier generations. The youth now, they want to take part, they want a better world, they want to take part in the actions and policy making and so on, and they are interested in creating a positive change. So let's say, for example, maybe people of the previous generation, they will have anger against each other or discrimination, but I feel like the youth right now are more open, they are more into, like, you know, every life matter and everyone deserves equal access to health and so on. So I guess this is why, and no one can deny all the efforts of the youth, even here in Malaysia. Like, for example, where I volunteer right now at the vaccination center, many of the people are youth, the one involved in registrations and so on. And they're doing it lightly, like they really enjoy doing it. They want to help. Also, they know that, like, the health effects on them and on their families, the risk and so on, but they don't care. They just want to help and they are doing it, like, happily. So I guess, yeah, this needs to be changed. We need to listen more to the youth, because I'm sure, like, if we incorporate them and whatever, if we listen to what they have to say, I'm sure that we will really achieve a better world. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I feel like everybody just needed to hear what you just said, Asra.
That
is so powerful.
Seriously. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Like, I have my young brother, he's just 12, but he still talks about, okay, this is right, this is wrong. So sometimes it's weird. Like, a kid can say what's right and what's wrong, can say what's fair and what's not, when we have, like, other politicians and other people who are in power, but they are messing things up. So it is important, especially at these times, to listen to every youth, I would say, yeah. because they have great ideas and I'm sure they have great potential to achieve great stuff.
100%.
Completely agree. And so really, you know, on this thread, I think, of fairness, of equality, I think one of the topics that, you know, you brought up, or at least, you know, had the proposal to the WHO about donor equity, right? And how, like, some issues are prioritized over others. And, you know, during this time, one of the things that, you know, was pushed forward and was supported was this idea of, like, temporarily, like, waiving intellectual property protections for the COVID-19 vaccines. And, I mean, even the US signed it. And so I think maybe my question just alludes to, you know, is there a responsibility for the richer countries to push for that form of equality? Or is it a process that needs to be, like, you know, top down, or is it bottom up? And in that process, what is the role of youth as citizens, right? Not just of their countries, but also of an increasingly globalized world? I don't know, what's, you know, when you think of that responsibility, what does it mean to you?
I feel like it's really tricky. Just because, to be very honest, just because, I mean, we could easily say, yeah, let's do a top-down approach, but then realistically, just like kind of like doing anything is just going to be really complicated. But I don't think it should be like maybe like the richer countries first. And I mean, I think we should try as much as we can for it to be like equal, just, but then in terms of using the youth, I think the youth could be like the drivers of change, just because like with everything, with the power of social media, we're able to see how much the youth can have an influence. So for example, with the Palestine-Israeli conflict, we can see how much change just like the social media campaign about everything has brought about, which we haven't seen in the past year, and I mean since the issue has begun. So I think any change that we want to have, we're able to do through the youth, maybe through social media, through, you know, the voice of the youth is quite powerful at this time, I guess, especially with the COVID pandemic where everything has just gone virtual. So I feel like it's even stronger now.
I want to add something to what Fatima said with regards to this. My little brother asked me, why isn't medicine for free? Why do people have to pay for something that could be easily available for everyone? So I had to explain it to him. I really believe that it is, in a way, kind of, especially with the pandemic, since, you know, with the borders and not allowing for the spread, I think it is a responsibility for developed countries to help underdeveloped countries, at least with their healthcare, if not something else, to stand on their own, because this is going to hurt them more than it's going to hurt the impoverished and underprivileged country. And in terms of healthcare and medicine, for me, in a utopia, in a world that where everyone helps everyone and divisions are not there and clashes and tensions are not there, I think the only thing that should be, one of the major things should be, is access to free healthcare for everyone. Then maybe we can move on from that to no wars and lovely la vie en rose world.
Yeah, and I think I'm building on what Elise is saying. The saddest thing that we saw was the whole India thing, where just like so this many people were dying in India and they didn't have access to the vaccine, even though like the vaccine is coming from them. So it was just like crazy. Yeah,
they're one of the biggest manufacturers.
Yeah, like it was,
yeah, because they were selling it
so much, but then like they're not getting any.
Yeah, and I mean, that speaks a lot to just the amount of vaccines that were pre-purchased actually by developed like nations, where I think Canada had enough vaccines to vaccinate its own population 5 times over, right? And I mean, yes, they're giving away some of these vaccines, like I'm not saying anything about that, but there is an enormous, you know, privilege in being able to hoard these vaccines knowingly taking them away from people who are in situations where it isn't free, it isn't manufactured, and there is no access, there's no network, right?
That's true.
Yeah, it's basically survival of the fittest, basically. That's how each nation took it upon itself we have the money, we're going to buy it, and then we'll see what we'll do about the countries who are in dire need.
I'm like literally trying. I'm so ashamed. Like I'm hiding behind my hands right now because like I'm from the United States. I'm currently living in Spain, but obviously like the United States has done so many mistakes as far as like hoarding vaccines, which is obviously affecting like access to the vaccine in other nations that need it so much more. And then also, you know, on top of that, we have like one of the biggest anti-vax movements. So it's just like Rami said, a very wishy-washy, unethical situation. But yeah, I mean, it's something that's super important that we need to keep in mind, especially moving forward.
I mean, I guess this is one thing that we have to learn after this whole COVID thing ends. Like we learned the mistake because I mean, like now more than ever, we know that no one is safe until everyone is safe. And we know that like, although there are so many people are vaccinated now, but still we're getting even more strains. So it doesn't help vaccinating one part of the world and leaving the others behind. It's only until all of us are vaccinated and everyone gets access to the vaccine, everyone is healthy, then only we can end this. So I hope like this pandemic is a wake-up call, I guess, for all of us, so that after this, it's like, it should be a collaboration between all the countries. It's not like, it's not the survival of the fittest. It shouldn't be that way. Although until now, in every situation, that's the only thing that we see. It's always the survival of the fittest in everything, mm-hmm. in health and peace and everything. But I guess that hopefully after this, we get to learn from the mistakes and hopefully like we will never face any other like similar situation. But let's see what the future holds.
Or at least if we do that, we actually like take those lessons that we learned during this really difficult time, because pandemic, like climate change is happening. Pandemics are forecast to continue happening. Sorry, y'all.
Such a grim spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. But like Asra said, like the most important thing is honestly just like taking those lessons, making sure that we really understand like we're all in this together, and we can't ensure the safety of everybody if we have those nations that are like trying to really do like vaccine hoarding that we talked about, or just like not giving other nations the opportunity to like ensure their own safety, which I think is super important to keep in mind. But I did have one last question for all three of you ladies. So at the end of the generations dialogue, I don't know if there was like any changes in your perceptions on youth participation or like access to healthcare. What are some key takeaways that you took away from the dialogue, our first dialogue? Maybe we can start with Fatima first.
I mean, I think for me, it was the lack of involvement of healthcare officials within that WHO itself, which doesn't really make sense to me, where it was just like, I think somebody was mentioning how it was mainly diplomats that make the decision. And that just sounds like very counterintuitive, or at least like it would make sense for me to kind of include both, because since it is like a part of the UN, then it would make sense that you would need diplomats, but you would also definitely need healthcare officials and like practitioners just to give their own opinion and their own input. And I think that's something that we really do need moving forward if the WHO is going to end up being effective and helping the world. And another thing is just like to kind of focus on the individual needs of certain regions and countries, just because we've seen that not everything that we can apply in the US, for example, can be applied to Nigeria, for example, or anywhere else. So there needs, although we do need to like focus on the issue globally, there is also a need to focus on like the local and like smaller issues within each region, just because not everybody's going to respond in the same way.
For sure, definitely. What about you, Elise? What was a key takeaway for you?
I think with everything that we discussed and where we have reached, I think that for me, the youth will have to be the salvation if there were to be like a sustainable humanitarian perspective in the UN or in any topic that discusses whether environment or health. Because for me, hate and division and power is only inherited. So if we put an end towards that greed that just goes with us, like, generation, if we change the actual mindset of our dear politicians and our dear world leaders, then maybe the change, it would start with us and would continue that way and would not enter this vicious cycle that power and greed and the need for that inhibits our current leaders.
Definitely, definitely. All right, last but not least, of course, Azra, key takeaways.
All right, so as for me, because like, as I keep on saying the same thing, so because all of us were of different countries in the first dialogue and we were also of different ages, but it was amazing to see that all of us had the same thoughts. We all wanted equal access to healthcare for everyone, regardless of their nationality or where they come from and so on. So I think like the key takeaways for me is that I realized that it's there, we have the ideas, and it's only if all of us collaborated, like people of different ages, of different nationalities, because all of us have great ideas and all of us can share our own experience from our own region. So I feel like, yeah, the change is almost there. So hopefully after this, we will rise like much, much, much stronger. And hopefully we can just achieve a better world by incorporating all our ideas, regardless of our age, regardless of our gender. And yeah, for now, all we can do is just pray for a better world, hopefully, after this incident. Yeah, so that's for me, yeah.
Well, one thing's for sure, you three ladies are definitely gonna be key players in making that positive change happen. And I definitely think so. I mean, it's very, all three of you have like very clear ideas and like, you know exactly where you want access to healthcare to be headed. Like everybody should have access. It's a priority for all of us. And that's something that we're going to continue working towards on an individual or on an organizational level. But I just wanted to thank all three of you for spending some time with us to just chat with us. Like round of applause. Yeah.
Round of applause. All the snaps.
So
all the snaps.
Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you so much.
It's been great talking to you guys. It has been great to listen to all of your ideas and all the suggestions. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having us.
Thank you.
No, thank you everybody for joining us. And really, you know, it crystallizes and boils down to is something that Andrea actually taught me, which is if you want to go fast, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together, right? And it really just captures that essence that sure, like, you know, you can protect yourself, but we still see, for example, Australia reeling from COVID-19, even though it still had its border closed. So like you said also, Asra, and like how a lot of different organizations are really trying to push forward this message that, you know, until everybody's safe, nobody's safe. And hopefully, you know, well, the way forward is through these enhanced collaborations and through honestly, just increased trust. I feel like a lot of the times that's what has become eroded during this pandemic. And that what it boils down to is trusting each other, that we're all going to put in the same effort in order to protect each other. And hopefully, you know, make a better world. And honestly, with climate change, save this planet. I think that's one of the key things that we really need to be thinking about. But again, it was lovely talking to every single one of you. And the proposal will hopefully be trying to share it very soon. And so with that, Andrea, let's wrap it with our famous phrase.
Oh my gosh, why am I blanking?
Stay safe.
And stay healthy, everybody.